As we close the month of June, we take a look back at what we have learned as well as what we still want to know about intimate partner violence in LGBTQIA+ communities and dig a bit deeper into resources for individuals experiencing abuse. I'm Maria McMullen.
And I'm Ron Corning.
And this is Genesis, the podcast. Ron, it's good to see you.
You as well, Maria. We've had certainly an interesting month, interesting conversations, and I think the net result is that we have brought to light for many people who weren't either aware or hadn't thought it through what the implications are in the LGBTQ plus community for violence in relationships from all angles.
Yeah, absolutely. And it being Pride Month, you know, we are getting a lot of attention around intimate partner violence in this community. But we want to keep that conversation going. And so I do want to recap a little bit about what we spent all month talking about. And from the data we explored, we know the prevalence of intimate partner violence for LGBTQIA+ relationships is higher than heterosexual relationships. But what I also learned is that specific tactics of abuse are more prevalent for partners in LGBTQIA+ relationships. The CDC reported in its most recent survey of intimate partner and sexual violence that rape, physical violence, and stalking are more common forms of abuse for LGBTQIA+ partners or former partners. And this is true for both women and men.
And how we explain that is not through one answer. There's not one explanation for why for why that number is A, higher than it is in the heterosexual community. And the caveat to that is not only is it higher, but it's more underreported.
True.
So the takeaway there is the number's actually really higher than the already high number.
Right.
That's being reported. And we have looked at this from so many angles, but among those who are most vulnerable to being the victims of violence are those of the trans community, and particularly and more specifically than that, women of color, trans women of color. And that brings into the conversation intersectionality, which we talked about in depth as well. And that is essentially, in layman's terms, as I've come to understand it and process it, it's when you have not one, not two, but maybe three or four factors that marginalize you even further.
Yeah, that's a great way to summarize that. And the original term of intersectionality was really created to explain the experience of women of color, specifically Black women, and their experience with employment in corporate America. But it's come to mean so many different things across the spectrum of gender-based violence and gender-based experiences that it really does fit within this context of exploring intimate partner violence.
Yeah, so if you're a woman as it relates to the workplace, if you're a woman, historically, you were more likely to be discriminated against. If you were a woman of color, the rate of discrimination went up even more. Now add to that, you are a trans woman of color.
Right.
And you've got already a foundational bias against anybody of the LGBTQ plus community, but especially the T.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Especially those who are trans. And now take all of that and plug that into an intimate relationship where somebody's not being discriminated against, but being acted out toward in a violent way. And what's the police response to it? What's the community response to it? If you're already living in secret, then to admit you're in a relationship with somebody who's being violent against you is to probably pull the curtain back on your whole life, which you're trying to navigate and manage in the shadows, really. You're living in the shadows already, so you're less likely to seek help.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're absolutely right, and this is the perfect storm.
The perfect storm. For, in extreme cases that we've seen play out in Dallas, for death, if not in an intimate relationship, just being targeted out in the community.
Right.
When it comes to, you know, we hear of gay bashing, which are targeted attacks on members of the gay community, typically carried out in areas where they know the gay community assembles, at bars, at restaurants, in neighborhoods, and so forth, and now targeting trans women of color as well, with the intention of doing harm, if not the intention to murder. And we've seen it play out way too often all across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, there are times when it does result in the death of an individual. We've also learned a little bit about how the community responds to men who experience intimate partner violence.
Well, and it's when we say the community, let's start with that thing which is most tangible in a situation of domestic violence, and that is seeking help. What's the first thing you do if you're in danger? You call 911. The hope is you get a swift police response. Are those officers trained to understand that two men in a relationship, one can be the aggressor, one can be the victim? There might be times where it's reciprocal in nature. It doesn't diminish in any one instance that one person may be in more danger than the other. Traditionally, what's the sentiment been about that? Well, two guys, they'll work it out. With two women, it is, how much harm could they do to each other?
Right.
So if that's the starting point, if that's the place from which police are responding to these cases, you can see where calls are not taken seriously, violence is allowed to continue and to escalate in the absence of any real response. However, what we also learned is here in Dallas, in your role at Genesis as a community organization, has gone the distance to really have a relationship with police to address these issues.
Yeah.
To make sure that this city hopefully sets an example for how you approach these domestic violence situations, where other departments in other places, and I think probably smaller communities, rural communities, are less likely to understand what's really happening, and therefore their response doesn't match the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we caught up with Mimi Sterling, the CEO of the Family Place, recently, she really explained to us the lack of response across the country and the unique nature of the shelter and support programs at the Family Place for men experiencing intimate partner violence. And that includes men in same-sex relationships.
It does. And what that means for them logistically, it is the only shelter for men in the state of Texas, only the second in the country. And we had a fascinating conversation with her.
Mimi, can you tell us what services are available at the Family Place for men in same-sex relationships experiencing abuse?
Thank you. Yes, yeah, so we at the Family Place offer a 24-hour hotline. That number is 214-941-1991. I'll repeat that again, 214-941-1991. And it's a 24-hour hotline, 365, where we service all victims of domestic abuse, including men, women, et cetera. And we welcome all people. And so if you are a member of the LGBTQ community, we do have shelters for men, and we welcome, men in any presenting as a man in our men's shelter, and any woman presenting as a woman in our women's shelter. As I mentioned before, we welcome men and their children as well in our shelter. So our shelter is Emergency Shelter Services, and that is a safe place to stay if you are fleeing a dangerous environment. We also have robust counseling services that are available in our McKinney Counseling Center. We have a counseling center in Central Dallas, and we also have a South Dallas location. So we know that domestic violence exists everywhere. And so our goal is to have counseling centers to meet our populations where they are.
Mimi, I know that there can be complications, complexities to mixing heterosexual men in an environment with gay men, potentially complicated. And I know the last thing you want is for somebody who's leaving a relationship where they've been abused to step into an environment where, for whatever reason, maybe they don't feel comfortable because there's somebody who's heterosexual who isn't gay accepting. How do you tackle that real life scenario?
Ron, that's a great question. What we have seen in our 5 years of our men's shelter, 4 years, is that the men that are in our shelter do find commonality in their victimization. And we also see that in the two shelters in the United States where it is women and men victims together in the same shelter, there are common experiences shared through their victimization. And so that commonality in our shelter experience has led to more community and less of a divide. So we do not see a lot of division between straight men and gay men in our shelter.
Their common experience essentially eclipse any biases they may have held or hold, is what you're saying.
That is what we see, yes.
And that's really interesting because when we were talking with X of House of Rebirth a couple of weeks ago, they also pointed out that regardless of how one identifies when someone is being abused, we have more in common than we do that's different about our experience. And so coming together as partners across the community based on those commonalities and kind of, addressing the differences that may exist along the way, it's really important to unifying everyone to stand against domestic violence in all of its forms for all people, regardless of gender or any other barriers.
Maria, that is so well said. Thank you for saying that. What we also see in our shelter is, as I mentioned before, we welcome men and their children. And that can sometimes be very difficult for a man bringing his children, whether they're children of the teen age or in the past, we have had a dad come with a very young infant, and our teams have helped that specific father, bathe the child, feed the child, get formula and things like that. So in this one instance, the dad had not been the primary caregiver and was put into a place of protecting his child and becoming the primary caregiver. And we were really pleased to be able to offer, extended parenting classes to help him.
When does the rest of the country rise up to meet this need? Are you receiving phone calls from organizations in other states, other cities that are asking how you've done it, what steps you took? Do you sense that it's happening? Is there any evidence that it's happening?
So we have been called upon by the city of Brooklyn in the last year or so about helping them figure out how to increase services to men. And we do serve as a resource. So if anybody out there is seeking how to do men's services, we are here for them.
That's great to know. And beyond, Brooklyn, it's a big old world out there. And this problem doesn't exist just here and in the other place where that shelter exists. So Mimi, thank you for being part of this conversation.
Thank you all so much for having me. And just one more word, what I would say to anybody listening to this, if you are experiencing any form of emotional or domestic abuse or violence, organizations like Genesis and The Family Place are here for you. Don't hesitate to call. Oftentimes the hardest step is making that first call, but we are here for you to get you to safety and to a brighter future.
We also talked about why people are abusive in this series, the power and control dynamic and the sense of entitlement. But we kind of glossed over the signs of abuse or an abuser, and we should circle back on that. DomesticShelters.org published an article on June 6, 2022, titled Profile of an Abuser. And you can find that on their website and social posts. But to summarize, the article points out behaviors and tactics that can help you spot an abusive personality. Do you want to, Ron, kind of take us through some of those examples?
Absolutely. These examples I find interesting because I think anybody should be mindful of all of this in a relationship. And during Teen Intimate Violence Awareness Month, there was an effort underway to educate young people on the signs as well, because the signs of an abusive person can show themselves at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
There are trends and there are markers, and there are certain behaviors that correlate with who this person will be as an adult and how they carry themselves out in a relationship. Here are some examples. Hatred or hostility toward women. And I wonder if that applies to a teenager who feels compelled or emboldened to treat a female teacher at school different than a male teacher.
They have a general
lack of respect.
Yeah, very possible.
Lack of respect for women. Cruelty toward animals.
And that's a big one. It's been noted widely across professionals through experts that cruelty towards animals in childhood is definitely a warning sign of an individual who definitely is
predisposed to being violent, not just toward animals, but to everyone.
Potentially, yeah. Yes, potentially. And so that is always a warning sign for parents and any adults or guardians alike when observing children or working with children. And then there's jealousy.
Well, there's jealousy, which I think sort of dovetails off the next one, which is a controlling nature. So if you're jealous, you're more likely to want to have control, to know more about what's going on. As it relates to young people in a relationship, it's when the partner wants to have access to your email. They want your password to your phone.
Mm-hmm.
They ask, who are you texting? And they want to see it. And part of the standard in the relationship is, I'm only going to date you if you show me who you're texting when I ask you.
Right.
Right, those sorts of things. And that can also happen in an adult relationship, whether married or not. Those kinds of controlling behaviors are a sign that something more nefarious could be at play. Desperation to move the relationship quickly. And I suppose that's an action that speaks to somebody wanting to lock into a relationship that is of some great benefit to them. The sooner they can lock it down and lock it in and get control, the better able they're going to be to carry out whatever it is they intend, whether it's that person's more financially stable and I need to be in a relationship where I have use of their money and their funds. Could be a range of things. It just could be an emotional need.
Yeah, I think anyone who rushes you into a relationship that appears to be moving too quickly for you, then that should be a place for you to take a pause and kind of think about what's happening. A way that desperation to move the relationship quickly can really present itself is through love bombing. So this constant, you know, display of affection and you know, words of just love and marriage and togetherness and gifts and attention and constant texting and calling and being with you. And all of that can seem very romantic, mm-hmm. especially at the outset when you are really becoming, you know, excited about being in this new relationship.
Well, love bombing is also one of the most prominent attributes of the narcissist,
yep,
who's looking to solidify a relationship with someone because they feel like they will benefit in great part socially, financially, in some other way. And it's not always as explicit as the examples you gave, and mm-hmm. I know that.
Sure.
It's mirroring somebody's interests. oh my gosh, I thought I was the only one who liked that movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a specific, I love that movie too. Or it's the love bombing isn't saying to you, you're my, I've never met anybody like you. You make me want to be a better person. I feel like you're the one. It's can be more covert than that, where they go to your friends and they say, I feel like I really, you know, I really like Ron, but I just feel like there's a wall there and I don't, he makes me want to be a better person. And I know you're really close to him. And, you know, what can I do to show him that I want to be an equal partner? And they work friends behind the scenes who then can have an influence on you. And you don't even realize you're caught up in this really manipulative tactic to try to solidify a relationship.
And that's all coercive control. It becomes part of the power and control wheel that we see in abusive relationships across the spectrum. And it is non-discriminatory. It affects men, women, any type of relationship. It is a warning sign for sure, those types of actions. And I'm glad you brought up narcissism because that is...
Turns out it's on the list.
It turns out it is on the list, as are many other things. And some of these things are a little more rare, like psychopathy. We don't always see psychopathy. We do see people who have power control issues and then they may become abusive, but... And you may not experience all of these things, but these are some things that should give you a pause if you're in a relationship and if you have a gut feeling that someone may be manipulating you or abusing you, and it doesn't have to manifest in physical abuse. It can be emotional, mental, financial, as you mentioned. It can be spiritual. If you have that gut feeling, take a look at it. And also, there are lots of places where... you can get safety, shelter, and support. So let's go through some of the resources that we've talked about in this series. So, of course, there's Genesis, Women's Shelter and Support, that serves anyone who identifies as a woman. Information at genesisshelter.org or by calling or texting 24/7 214-946-HELP, 214-946-4357.
It's an important message because, as we've pointed out, the rates of violence against trans women is on the increase. No one knows that better than House of Rebirth. We talked to X, who is the director there, about the need they have for more alliances, more relationships to continue to raise money and raise awareness and provide even more services. So hopefully in that there will be, over time, a solid connection between those two organizations, Genesis, the services they provide to anybody who identifies as a woman in House of Rebirth, and Family Place, which we've talked about, where men and women can reach out for help, thefamilyplace.org. You can call 214-941-1991. Let me just say, too, it's houseofrebirth.org, houseofrebirth.org. And, you know, really in so many ways... anybody who's a victim of domestic violence, House of Rebirth for them, any place that's a safe haven that provides counseling and guidance and a roadmap forward really is, in its own way, a rebirth because they're reclaiming their lives. They're leaving behind something that can be so painful emotionally, but leave them feeling uncertain about how to trust anybody moving forward. You almost have to hit the reset button and learn how to live again.
Yeah, it's very traumatizing. And so there's going to be significant trauma experienced by anyone who is in an abusive relationship. And so it can be a rebirth of sorts once you get the support that you need. And there's also the National Domestic Violence Hotline. It's available to all people. And their website is thehotline.org or call 800-799-7233. And I want to point out as well, when you call any of these organizations or reach out for help, in most instances, I know we can do this at Genesis and the Family Place can do this as well. If we don't have the service that you need, we can connect you with the service that best suits your needs. So never hesitate to reach out to any of these organizations that we mentioned today. And I also want to mention a resource available to LGBTQ youth. And that is the Trevor Project, which is an organization we didn't talk to on the show, but it focuses on LGBTQ youth suicide prevention. Information can be found at thetrevorproject.org or call 866-488-7386. You can even text the word START, START, to 678-678 to get started.
And we didn't delve a great deal into that, but suicide can be in so many cases. My therapist years ago said to me, when watching me covering on the news what had been that year a rash of suicides, Robin Williams and Anthony Bourdain, mm-hmm. Kate Spade, I believe, as well.
Yeah.
And we're inclined to say somebody committed suicide. Well, you commit a crime, mm-hmm. you commit an act, and it puts it on that person. And he described to me, suicide really is the irreversible symptom of a mental health issue where somebody feels like their absence in the world is actually going to help everybody around them.
Wow.
And when you look at it in that way, that it is the deadliest symptom or deadliest condition of a mental health issue, you begin to think differently about really what suicide is. But for many who are in abusive relationships and are also marginalized,
right,
are young people who've been kicked out of their homes, disowned by their families, don't have the means or the resources. They find safety sometimes in relationships with people who say, I'll care for you. I see the value in you.
Mm-hmm.
When that person may be looking to exploit that young person.
Absolutely.
So then they are now in a worse situation, unable to come out, unable to admit they're in an abusive relationship. And then you start to see how all of this lends itself to feeling there's no way out and contributes to further mental health deterioration. And so the Trevor Project really tries to get ahead of that on all levels to let young people know. And when I say young, even early 20s, 13 to 24, they essentially are there to say, we can help you, much like you all do with women who are
yes.
in situations where maybe they have or have not contemplated suicide, but that's what they're there for. And I think it's so incredibly valuable. And I think they've become a leader in that space. And I hope that more young people understand that.
As do I. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring it up in this podcast. Suicide prevention is an area we did not cover in the series, but it is important and relevant to intimate partner violence, abuse in the home that may or may not be intimate. It could be child abuse in the home. And I want to call out some very unsettling statistics to a 2022 survey by the Trevor Project. Of the 34,000 LGBTQ youth ages 13 to 24 across the United States who participated in the survey, 45% seriously considered attempting suicide in the past year. And relative to the subject of abuse, more than 30% of LGBTQ youth, transgender youth, and non-binary youth who were surveyed experienced a form of physical threat or actual physical harm related to their identity. The outcomes of this survey are very interesting, and you can find the data and the report on thetrevorproject.org. And I do want to mention for all listeners, we will expand on the topic of suicide in the coming weeks on Genesis, the podcast. So be sure to follow us and subscribe to the podcast so that you can catch that episode.
And I think I said this during one of the episodes, but there's only one word that describes this perfect storm of being disowned by a family member because of your identity, feeling like you can't come out in any work environment because you may be judged, you may lose your job,
mm-hmm.
getting in a relationship where you are You have no voice and you can't speak to the abuse because then you're coming out by doing so. To me, all of this is what hopelessness is.
Yes, you did say that. It feels a hopeless situation.
Hopeless. And when you're without hope, you're without any feeling of worth or value. And you wonder, why am I here? Why do I continue with this? At every turn, I'm hitting a roadblock. I'm being abused. I have no place to turn. You can see why the rates of suicide among young people who are caught up in the collective that we just described feel hopeless and feel like there's no way out.
And I want us to be a resource for them. We'll keep bringing resources to the community that can directly speak to those needs, to that sense of hopelessness, and hopefully restore the feeling that they can reach out, that they should not fear reaching out. And when they are ready, when it makes sense and it's safe, Genesis is here and all of the other resources are here.
I want to say just one more thing as we wrap this up at the end of this Pride Month. And this occurred to me this month. And, you know, maybe I'm late to this revelation. I felt like Pride Month this year, more so than any years previous, was far more mainstream than I'd ever witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
I'll cite a couple of examples. Large television mainstream networks, ABC, Good Morning America, having a gay marriage live on their show.
Mm-hmm.
Local television stations, including CW33, where I do some work, airing the Pride Parade. Seeing at Fair Park that the Pride Parade was not just about gay men and women having a celebration, but their families, their parents, their nieces, their nephews, their own children among same-sex couples who've adopted or had children through other means, et cetera. And in that, there's a great deal of hope, and we're marking progress. But what I also saw was a backlash, a false narrative that the gay community is grooming children to be gay, categorically untrue. The fact that the drag community was targeted for the reading groups that they had. Were there a couple of missteps in that? Of course there were. But there are heterosexual families who take their young boys to Hooters. So if taking your children to a drag show and something happens that you think is a little too risque, measure that against the other imagery they're seeing in R-rated films that they can watch on
or video
HBO
games.
Or video games. Or they have taken those moments to create a false narrative. And what I feel is a new resistance and a new push against the gay community that's going to make it more difficult for those trans people to come forward. It's going to make it more difficult where we thought we were making progress, that gay marriage was a step forward. Now there's talk and a signal from Clarence Thomas that he'd like to see that reconsidered. So I just think we need to be mindful that as we address these issues of domestic violence in same-sex relationships, that much of the progress we've made that would allow people to be emboldened to step out and live in their truth and also speak to the injustices they're experiencing, many of them will go back into the closet because they're feeling this pushback now. And in some cases, I've seen people take a new stand on how they feel about gay people that is a complete about face from where I thought they were with it and who they were as people. And it's disheartening, and I think we need to be aware of it.
I understand where you're coming from, for sure. We're definitely in a tumultuous time.
Mm-hmm.
We're recording this at the end of June, shortly after Roe was overturned by the Supreme Court, and we all know what's streaming out of the Supreme Court and social media and regular media. And it's interesting times. It's challenging times. I think we need to double down.
But it's interesting that we did this with the intention of hoping members of the LGBTQ plus community would be more aware of how to avoid getting into relationships where they're at risk, would feel more emboldened to step forward when they are in a relationship where they're at risk and they're victims of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, as we're doing that, there's an opposite and equal movement that I hope doesn't trump it, that pushes progress in reverse, pushes this in reverse.
It's the best of times. It's the worst of times. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just going to have to double down, stand in solidarity together with the groups that we support and continue helping and hoping mm-hmm. and providing the services that individuals experiencing abuse desperately need.
Because everybody deserves to be treated with respect. Everybody deserves to have the opportunity to have a healthy, wholesome life, whole and full life. And many of the people we've talked about and highlighted are in situations where they have not had that opportunity.
Yeah. I totally agree. Completely agree with that sentiment. And we've only scratched the surface. We are not done talking about intimate partner violence and LGBTQIA+ relationships. And we will revisit these issues throughout the year on Genesis, the podcast. You can send questions to podcast@genesisshelter.org. And it is our commitment to the entire LGBTQIA+ community that we will keep talking about this. It's not just an issue for Pride Month. It's just the month that we launched it.
Yeah. Well, on behalf of the community, if I can be a spokesperson for a moment.
Please do.
Thank you very much. It's greatly appreciated.
Well, it's what we do, and we stand with you. And I want to thank you for partnering with Genesis this month. It has really made a difference in the conversation around intimate partner violence.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you. If you or someone you know is in an abusive relationship, you can get help or give help at genesisshelter.org or by calling or texting our 24/7 crisis hotline team at 214-946-HELP, 214-946-4357. Data and statistics referred to in this series come from the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence and the National Domestic Violence Hotline. Genesis Women's Shelter and Support is grateful to our partners for the podcast series on intimate partner violence in LGBTQIA+ relationships, including media host Ron Corning, On Air Media, the Conference on Crimes Against Women, House of Rebirth, and the countless number of courageous survivors of intimate partner violence who contribute to the education, safety, and healing of all people by sharing their stories and experiences. Thank you for being you.